Hey, Freedom Family, welcome to the Unlock Your Freedom podcast. My name is Kira Miller. I am the founder and host of this series. Every other week, we'll bring you some of the most life-giving conversations that will empower you to overcome your shame, own your truth, and unlock your freedom. Thank you for joining this conversation today. Now let your freedom journey begin. Hey, Freedom Family, welcome back to the Unlock Your Freedom podcast. My name is Kira Miller. I am the founder and host of this series. And today's conversation was with Savannah Locke, who is a Nashville-based singer and also a writer as well. And today we talked a lot about how she has struggled with sexuality in the sense of she really struggled with masturbation and pornography, and she shared how she's really unlocked her freedom with that, and she's found that she can now own that part of her life and share it with other people, which is really connected with me because it was something that she felt was too dark to share with anyone for the longest time, and she thought that she was really alone in what she dealt with, which is very similar to my own story because I thought that my secret was too dark to share with anyone and that no one else had like catfish people. So I just felt very alone in that. So I'm super excited to share this one with you today. And if you struggle with shame, but you desire freedom, I just believe that this conversation is going to empower you to do just that. So here we go. So who would you say Savannah Locke was in the beginning of your journey with shame?
You know, I was thinking about this and the word that came to mind was hidden.
I love that word because it describes my journey.
Yes, yeah. Just so in the background in a wallflower. I think I was really insecure. Mm-hmm. And when you think about insecure just as an actual word, like not when we think insecure and think of like a 13-year-old in eighth grade, yeah. But like insecure, I wasn't firm and I wasn't found and yeah. I didn't feel like I was seen. And so because of that, every single step I took was so disintegrated. Yeah. It was just like all over the place.
So how did you see that playing out in your family life, your relationships, your school, all that?
Yeah, I would say it probably showed up most at school because that's where you are, you know, obviously growing up, that's where you're spending most of your day. And I think every day I would go to school and be searching for identity. Okay. And I would be so desperate to find something to make me feel comfortable mm-hmm. or confident. And we were talking about this earlier, but I'm an Enneagram 4. So I find a lot of my identity in being unique and special.
Yes. Yep.
So what I would do is like try to become a really great like singer, a really great actress or like get into all of these like artistic things. Mm-hmm. But because I wasn't confident, like I would just keep on failing and then it would feed more into the story of shame, which says like then you just need to stay hidden and in the background.
Yes. Dude, yeah. This is literally the exact story of one of my friends actually. Like mm-hmm. she talks about so much of how she like, I mean, she is a singer and mm-hmm. she's talked about how she like she has really negative voices in her head because she's like such an individualist where mm-hmm. she feels like she can't connect with people and stuff because she like needs to be something that no one else is essentially. Yeah. So that's crazy. Like in school and stuff, who would you say kind of you were then? I mean, with that.
Yeah, I think I was honestly probably a little deceptive.
Okay.
Because I wasn't sure who I was. Mm-hmm. So then what I would do is look around at people who were popular, seemed like they had their stuff together. And then I would just act like I was them. Team. And so like in those conversations, like that you can think of like at the lunch table or whatever, when they're like, oh my gosh, like I really love like Maroon 5's new single. And you're like, oh my God, I love it too. Even though you've never heard it. Yes, exactly. Or didn't. Yes. And then what's scary though, is that when you start just like projecting and identifying with everything else, you lose yourself.
Yeah.
And so I think it wasn't until I was in college that I was like, oh my gosh, like what do I even like? Okay. Like I've been spending so much time trying to fit in by saying I loved certain things or acted certain ways or dressed in certain ways that I didn't even know who I was.
Mm.
Yeah.
So just fully, you like really didn't – like you tried to be other people essentially?
1,000%, yes.
Okay. I totally get that because I think I was sharing with you, but the same, like I wanted to be popular. I mean, who doesn't really? Mm-hmm. But you don't realize that you do lose yourself in the process of trying to become someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So – and then, well, what would you say maybe, like, were the voices in your head telling you when you were growing up just, like, well, Savannah, you are this person? Like, what were those negative voices in your head?
I think if I was going to say like a broad stroke term, mm-hmm. it would probably be unworthy. Mm. But how that showed up on probably smaller levels would be like, you're not good enough to make this team. You're not good enough of a singer to, you know, do your own thing. I remember I had this talent show in eighth grade where I auditioned and I sang Norah Jones, Don't Know Why, which is the world's most boring song.
Yeah, I was going to say it is a fairly boring.
Very boring. Yeah. Like literally, I think there are four notes that she hits the whole time. But I don't know. When I did that audition, I just remember like barely stepping out on stage because I was so mortified.
Yeah.
Of people seeing me, but then there was still this thing that I think it was God preserving that like dreamer in my heart that still said like, hey, like you have this in you.
Yeah.
And you can just step out and do it.
Yeah.
But I think I was just so mortified to do it. And then I think whenever I actually did step out on stage and, you know, the lights are on you and people are staring and like judging you, I think that the voices immediately come rushing in your head saying like, you don't have what it takes. Huh. You're going to fail.
Yeah.
Like when you do sing, no one's going to like it. You're pitchy. Like even thinking from a technical perspective, like those things would happen.
So you couldn't shut the voices out?
Oh, no, of course not. Yep. And
because I know some people can just, and I'm like, feels right. How?
I don't know how.
Which I'd almost even rather feel them. Yeah, I know, right?
Yes, I'm a little bit better equipped now at this point to like handle them. But especially when you're younger and don't have a sense of identity, then when you hear lies waging war against your identity but you don't know who you are, then they might as well be truth because you're not sure or don't have a sense you're insecure. So when someone's like, you're insecure, you're like, yeah, actually I kind of am insecure. And then you just start believing everything.
Okay, so talk about, I know that you've struggled with like sex and stuff, so talk about that, like where that journey began. Go into as much detail as you want. Or you can leave things out.
So when I was younger, I was 8 years old, I was sexually abused, and that happened. I only have a couple of vivid memories of it, but the way that that happened was that it was in exchange for a video game. So he would give me a video game, and then he was allowed to do whatever he wanted to me. So my body and mind, what I now realize is that my body and mind started equating visual stimulation with physical stimulation.
Interesting.
Yeah. So because of that, I shut down, like I did tell people that it happened and it stopped happening, but we never talked about it. Like I never went to therapy about it. I never talked about it afterwards.
You never got to process it really.
Not when I was younger. So like any unhealed wound, it came back up. Heck, and so when I was in like eighth grade and ninth grade, this is when like the internet was like way more of a thing. Yeah. MySpace had come out, Facebook, the whole thing.
Like the awkward phase of life too.
1,000%. And with that came like pornographic images and with like naked people. And when I would see those images, my mind would go back without me even knowing. It would go back to that trauma, stimulate my body, and then I would just get addicted to it.
Okay.
So because of that, I was super addicted to pornography and then masturbation as a result, like from ninth grade until my senior year of high school and then a little bit even into college. And what it was my way of Ian Morgan Cron from Typology says it this way. He talks about addiction, and he says a lot of the times we're addicted at our wounds. So we drink at our wounds, or we watch porn at our wounds.
Yeah.
And so for me, my addiction was a way of trying to cope with this unhealed wounding that had happened to me that I had never even talked about. And at that point, I had so suppressed that I forgot I had even been abused.
So have you had a hard time in your life, like maybe being self-aware because you have always suppressed a lot of stuff? Because for me, it's actually interesting. I'm like, at least from what I know, like childhood stuff and everything, I'm always been super self-aware, but I let it stay up in here in my mind and I don't often like share it with people. So it's like, it's still constantly there, but it's just like, I don't know how to articulate it sometimes. And like, I don't want to share it because I know it's there, but I think it's dark. And so I'm like, well, I'm not going to tell anyone about it because they'll think I'm crazy. But for you, it was just like so far down that you didn't even know it was there.
I lived in complete denial for like 15 years.
Whoa.
And it was trauma. Like it was trauma-induced denial. It wasn't like I was purposely being like, this didn't happen to me. It was, I was so young.
Yeah.
And when I brought my story to adults, they were just like, shut it down. So that's all that I knew to do with my pain. So even like when you were talking about who were you when you were younger, when I was in high school and even middle school, I would have never said to you, I'm insecure. Okay. I would have always been like, fine. Oh, I'm fine. Everything's fine. Yeah. Because that became like the way that I coped with things.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I got to college and like started going to therapy when memories started popping up about my abuse that I was like, I need to work through this stuff. And that's where the self-awareness came.
Okay. So what made you want to go to therapy?
So
kind of the breaking point maybe.
In 2012, I went to England. I think that year is correct. So if anyone is going to fact check me, that might not be. I don't know if anyone's out there. But
sure.
In 2012, I went to England on this like 3 months mission trip with Youth for Christ. And I actually roomed with a therapist. So someone who had just gotten her degree in like psychology.
Yeah.
She wasn't licensed yet or anything, but I'm sure she was just eager to therapize someone. Yes. And she was like, you have issues. So I was rooming with her and she just was like, what's your story? And I like did the whole like, oh, blah, blah, blah. Like I grew up in church and then like I got saved when I was this year's
old.
Told the
story
like just
that you knew how to
regurgitating.
Tell. Yep.
And she was like, you know, something tells me that's not completely true.
I need to start saying that to people. Dang. Okay.
And I was like, and as soon as she said that, it was like all of a sudden something unlocked in me. And I was like, that isn't true. And I just started telling her, well, when I was younger, like I got abused and then I was super addicted to pornography and masturbation. It was the first time I'd ever told anyone that. And I was like, and I had all of these years and then I had this like awakening experience with God when I was a senior in high school.
Yeah.
And I like talked a little bit about how like for me, that is when like my addictions really ended.
Okay.
It wasn't like this cutoff point or anything, but it was when I started finding healing.
Yeah.
I didn't feel the need to go back to those things. But as I was like expressing all of that stuff, she was like, that's your story. And I just remember thinking, I never knew that I had a story to tell because I had suppressed it.
Yeah. So how did you feel maybe when like all that was exposed to you? Was it really like, did you feel naked?
1,000%. Yeah. I use that term naked a lot, actually.
Yeah.
So with her, with this girl, her name is Laura, she's like just the perfect person to have been in that conversation with.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a gift from God. And I felt so relieved and curious about my own life that it was just something where I was like, dang, like that happened to me. It was just this realization moment is all I can think. I didn't feel shame.
Okay,
I felt
okay.
so relieved to talk about
awesome.
It. And after that summer, because you had asked about how I went back to therapy. After that summer, I came home and like kind of talked to my family and I was like, I need to work through this because everyone knew, but like no one had, because they hadn't really gone through their own healing journeys yet.
Mm-hmm.
All they knew was to suppress you.
Yeah.
So basically they were like, let's get you in therapy. And I was like, yes. And so I found this therapist in Nashville who I still go to this day. So it's been 7 years.
That's amazing.
And that was when I really started being able to process through like, why was I addicted to pornography in the first place and masturbation? And how did like I had like an eating disorder and body shame and all of that, how connected it was to this one unhealed childhood trauma.
Yeah. So really like, well, actually, it's funny because the person who I was talking to earlier, like, said the same thing, that they struggle with all these things like addiction and anger, but it was because there was one source of issue that they never got to, like, fix or heal or, like, really even knew about. And all these other things that were surrounding it were just, like, ways to try and escape it, essentially.
Wow, that's powerful.
Yeah, so that's exactly what was happening for you.
Yeah, it was the same thing, I think. And I think, you know, even as we're talking about like things like pornography and masturbation, any sort of addiction, for me it was so linked to that abuse, which is not the case for everyone.
True.
But for me too, like I think the reason why, for example, like I haven't really struggled with that since is because it was so linked to me healing from that trauma. Whereas I think some people like really do have like addictive personalities or whatever, that that's something that they also need to work through. And I know that it's not everyone's story to be able to say like, hey, like actually when I met Jesus and really started healing, like it went away.
Yeah.
So I just want to recognize that that's not everyone's story, but it's definitely mine.
So it was that connected with
it was so connected with that.
Interesting. Okay.
Yay.
So then like once it was kind of all exposed and now you've been in therapy and stuff, like how have you really started to own it, whether it be with your family or with friends or now like even on a podcast? Like, because I think there's, no matter how much we deal with something, like we can choose to just kind of leave it in the past, or we can choose to like really talk about it and keep like kind of processing it, because old wounds might pop up that we never knew we had.
Mm-hmm.
So like, when was that you kind of decided, well, I'm going to keep owning this?
Well, I write.
Okay.
So I have always written in some capacity, even since I was younger. And when I started going to therapy, I didn't realize it at the time, but like my natural post-therapy therapy was to write. Okay. And I would always leave my session, go home, and just start writing about what happened. Cool. Or write about everything. And at that point too, I was sharing a little bit on my Instagram, and it was just pretty healing, like, for me to be able to say stuff in public, because for so long my voice had been silenced.
Right.
That for me to be able to say, like, this is my story now, and I'm an adult, and I can say what happened and not be afraid. So it was kind of this empowering thing for me at first to take my voice back, because it had been stolen.
Yeah.
And I think that what started as an empowering thing for me became an empowering thing for other people. So when people started like messaging me saying, you know, even in my case, the person who had abused me had abused other people, and they didn't ever feel the freedom to say anything until I said something.
Okay.
So to see like a visible reaction from people,
so cool,
that they were actually finding. I'm thinking about Paul and Silas, that story. Do you know what I'm talking about in the Bible? So Paul and Silas, when they were put in prison.
I heard the name Silas.
Yes.
Yikes.
No, I love it. I think it's in the book of Acts. More. No, I love it. So Paul and Silas were basically put in prison, and the way that prisons were set up, or at least as I've been taught in college, is that they were set up like vertically. So basically there would be like a prison cell, and then a prison cell underneath, whatever.
Oh, gosh.
So from what a lot of historians believe to be true is that Paul and Silas were like in one of the bottom prisons because they were like scum of the earth, basically, because of what they were preaching.
Okay. Yeah.
And when they were singing hymns to God while they were in prison, basically angels came and like shook the whole thing, and everyone's chains broke free. So I think about that story often when I think about why I share my story, is because a lot of the times I do feel like with my particular story of just like being abused in the church, and the church shutting it down, and like there's just so much trauma and so many layers to it, I do sometimes feel like I've been like at the bottom of the prison chain, like at the bottom. But like when God like set me free from like being enslaved to that, and being enslaved to being a victim, and like finding my power in victimhood, and like all of that stuff, and finding so much healing, what I'm realizing is that like it's actually setting like everyone else free.
100%.
Like my process helps other people be able to process themselves.
Yeah. And I think the power of it too is like talking about it in the moment. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually in I go to the Belonging and I do like a connect group, and it's what I thought was going to be a Bible study is literally a group of women just sharing the pain that they get to go through every single day. And literally, no joke, without fail, every single time we cry, like we all just like we get to experience our pain together and process things together. I mean, it's kind of like therapy, essentially.
Yeah.
It's different than therapy because it's a group setting, but like it's friendship, and we literally just get to like process life together, and then also celebrate like the wins that we have in life and stuff. But what I'm learning is, well, what I guess I've learned probably over the maybe past 5 years or something from my own story is like the process of telling your story in the midst of it. Like not just from the past.
I love that.
Because it is being transparent when you're like talking about it in the past. But like now, if you're sharing your life with someone, it doesn't have to be on a public platform. But like if you're sharing your life with just one person, like your friend or your family or your husband, like then you are being vulnerable with them, and you're sharing like, hey, I'm going through this right now and I need someone to be there with me, which is so
powerful.
You're
giving an opportunity for connection.
Yeah. And then you do get to unlock their freedom as well, because it's like maybe they are going through something similar, or maybe they then get to know you more, and like that helps your relationship just absolutely grow beyond what you could have imagined.
It's so true. And I think sometimes we do feel this pressure to connect with people through perfection, or by like performing really well and being what we think they need from us, but it's actually the opposite that's true, is when we're just ourselves, even in our mess, in our imperfection, and in our wounds, that is actually giving them an opportunity to connect with the real you.
Yeah. Well, what's crazy is I have never had this revelation about my life before, but when I was like processing my own story to one of my best friends probably a few months ago, like the day I was supposed to tell my story on my podcast, but ended up having to change the days, I was at breakfast with her, and I literally just started sobbing, and like I couldn't explain why. And I think what I realized afterwards is because I was re-experiencing old wounds that I didn't really know were there, and I was like just uncontrollably crying like I never have before. And I kind of thought I blacked out actually because I was like, what the heck? This is weird. I don't know where I am, all that. And she said the most powerful thing to me. She said, Kira, this is the most real Kira I've ever seen of you because you are so like broken open and just like you're free, literally. Like you're just being uncontrolled, which I am a very like, I like to keep everything in order. So that was super powerful. And then I went on to say that to someone yesterday because I felt like God gave me a revelation of like the best way you can lead a person is actually when you're just being. Mm-hmm. You don't have to like seem a certain way. You don't have to like say all these powerful things. Yeah. You just cry. You can cry in front of other people who maybe didn't know that they could have the invitation to cry as well.
It's so
and
true.
That's leading them to Jesus and like to just like freedom, really. Yeah,
it's so true.
Which so it sounds like you have really seen that in your life then too.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, and I think anyone listening would be able to put a finger on a person that they've felt magnetized towards because of their ability to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to relate to someone who isn't real because they're not being real.
Right.
And that's it's just a defense mechanism. It's no judgment on them. It's just a part of life, though, that we're drawn towards people who are vulnerable.
Yeah.
Which when I think about Jesus, too, like I think that's one of the reasons he was so magnetic towards people.
So true.
Is because he came and he was just super, super vulnerable. Yeah. And you see people coming from everywhere just to be around him.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think about humility, us bearing the image of God in the same way, like that's what part of owning our own stories means, is that we walk into a room without any facade, no masks, knowing that like that will actually draw people into connection and into God's love.
Yep. So powerful.
That's powerful.
Yeah. Dang.
I love how we're like, that was good.
I know, right? Jesus, you rock.
Yeah.
So, okay. How have you like, maybe seen in your entire life then, now that you've like really shared your story with people, how have you seen that just impact the rest of your life now?
That's like a great question.
Relationships?
Yeah. I'm just particularly thinking about my marriage. Mm-hmm. I think for so long, I never thought that I would be able to have like a good sex life, an intimate relationship with someone. I never thought I would ever feel fully known and fully loved by someone. And what I had been programmed to believe my whole life was that I was lovable as long as, you know, I was joyful, or as long as I had
you're
something to
this.
Bring to the table.
Yeah.
And there was so much fear for some reason surrounding my marriage, where I was just so mortified that if I was needy or something, that Todd would just get up and abandon me. And I would say that the number one place that I've seen my healing bleed into is in probably my marriage with Todd, because it's been a gift and it hasn't been stifling. I don't feel controlled. Yeah. I feel fully known, fully loved. Like when it comes to like sex stuff too, that I thought I would just be triggered 24/7. But then what you come to find out is that God has made us to be very resilient people.
Yes.
And when he talks about healing, you know, whether it's through therapy or however, whatever mode of healing that you've experienced, that that's real. And that I've experienced that. And so being able to be like physically intimate and emotionally intimate with another person is something I literally would have thought was impossible 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And then now I'm here and I'm like, wow, that's real healing.
You can't have it.
Yes.
So cool.
Yeah.
Dang, that's amazing. So, okay, who would you say then has like been holding you up through all of this? Could be multiple
people.
My therapist.
Yeah,
right? God, you never
know. Yeah, the Lord. I'm definitely my therapist. Her name is Sherry. Okay. I love her. She,
7 years?
7 years now, since 2012.
That's incredible.
And for those first 2 or 3 years, we met every week.
Wow.
Yeah, and she did our premarital counseling with me and Todd. She does, like, counseling with me and Todd now and me separately. And so she has honestly been – I call her my Moses because whenever Moses crossed the Red Sea, like, he puts the staff in the water, water opens, and then he walks forward, and then Israel follows him. And I literally feel like that's what Sherry has been
so
for
cool.
me, where she has been to all of these places before because of her own story. And I feel like she has just fearlessly led me into healing, too.
Yeah.
So definitely her. My best friend, Catherine, has a similar story as I do. And so we have definitely been in the trenches together for the last 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
So there has been some really difficult parts about sharing the same story. But when I think of people who have held me up and been able to say me too and really mean it and know it, I would say she has definitely held me up. And then my husband, which I've talked about already, but clearly you all know I'm obsessed with it.
And that's okay.
He has held me up too.
Yes.
And then obviously like Jesus, like where it's like clearly 1,000,000%, I could not have done anything or experienced any of the healing that I have without his affection for me. Just thinking of the fact that one of my most pivotal healing moments was when there's something called EMDR. It's basically where you go back into certain memories and kind of reprogram your brain not to be in panic. And when I was going back to this specific memory of me being abused, on the last session, she invited Jesus to come into the story with me. And just thinking about how healing of an idea that that was, that in my deepest, most traumatic moment, that that God was with me, and to know that when he says, like, he'll never leave you or forsake you, and that traumatic things are going to happen and suffering is a part of life, but the guarantee that we have is that God will always be present with us.
Mm-hmm.
When I think about how powerful a message that is, that God is near.
Yeah.
And that he was near. Yeah. And when you think about, I just talked about Moses, I guess I'm on an Exodus kick, but with Moses, when Moses encounters God in the burning bush and Moses asks for God's name, God says, I am.
Yeah.
And this idea that God isn't bound to buildings, institutions, people, places, whatever, like that he is just present.
Yeah.
And you can look back in memories and see his presentness. I think that that's something that's just been very powerful for me and has kept me floating.
Well, it's funny because I was going to ask you basically something very similar to that. Like, when do you feel like that, like you were maybe the most connected with God, which it sounds like when you were reflecting on that period of your life?
Are you saying right now?
Well, maybe in general, like, because I know people say, like, when did God become real for you or Jesus become real for you? But, like, I mean, I almost want to say instead, like, when did you feel the most connected with Jesus?
Yeah, so that has happened in different phases, for sure, of life and in different phases of healing. Whenever I was working through trauma, being able to reflect back and invite God into situations, or at least invite my awareness of him and to ask him where he was, I think that that definitely drew a connection to 12-year-old Savannah with me now, and kind of like integrating my whole self versus like looking back and thing that happened to a different person. I think that connected God connecting me to me connected me to God. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I think that that was a way that I've experienced deep connection with him. And recently I think that I've been experiencing God through, this is going to sound so cliche, but through everything. Like when you think about that verse in Colossians that talks about how Christ is like in all things and that in him all things hold together, this idea that God is not, once again, bound to like a church service, which church services aren't bad.
Right.
But to think that
he doesn't
that,
just
like,
leave or just doesn't stay there.
Yes.
Like, he leaves
like the
with
veil
you.
Was torn, which means that like his presence, there's no separation anymore between like holy and unholy and sacred and secular.
Yeah.
He's actually in everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like when with that realization, I'm literally having it like now, like in the past couple of months of just thinking like, whoa, every time I experience love, I'm experiencing God.
Yeah.
Every time I see glimpses of light and kindness and goodness and restoration, I'm experiencing God.
100%.
There's something so powerful about that because it doesn't limit him to this like thing, but it's like in all things I can experience him.
Yeah. Oh, I love
that. Isn't that exciting?
Yes. Oh, totally. Because like you, I mean, with everything in your life, you think that like maybe that all these things define you essentially, but like when you put Jesus as your definition, he defines you in all of these different things,
good.
If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's like he, like when you just put your hope in that, you don't have to like strive anymore.
It's
you just
so
like,
true.
You just get to rest in the fact that he is with you, like in the darkest moment, in also the strongest moment, in like times where you have a hard time talking to other people, or maybe moments of like isolation, even. And it's like, He's literally with you in every single moment.
Yeah.
And he was back there with you in your childhood trauma, but now he's also like here with you right now. He's also in your future.
Yeah.
He's all over.
Yeah.
And that's like the most powerful thing that I've been learning lately about Jesus too.
Yeah, the presentness.
Yeah.
Which is
why you don't have to like fear evil going back to reflecting on your childhood trauma, but also like why you don't have to fear it going forward in uncertain times, because mm-hmm. he already is there leading the way for you.
Yes.
Just like Moses was with the staff, like mm-hmm. he's leading the way for you and he's going to protect you.
Yeah.
So
that the future isn't a place he's going to go with you, but that the future is
there.
Actually a place that he already is. Yeah. Which, so there's no reason to fear.
Which like, I think it was probably from church, but I have like really started speaking. I don't know the verse like number, but just like the verse, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death,
yeah,
I will fear no evil.
Yeah.
And I have been speaking that over my life and other people's life because what is like, it's shown me that when you do reflect on things in your past, it seems scary.
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't want to think about, you don't want to rehash the mm-hmm. things in your life that you had to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
It seems the shadow, it's mm-hmm. like a perception. Mm-hmm. It seems scary. And then enemy is like, don't go back there
mm-hmm.
because it's too scary. You don't want to handle, or you can't handle it. But God is actually like, no, it's just a perception. It's actually not scary.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to fear evil because I'm already there.
Yeah.
And same with the future.
Yeah.
It's like uncertain seems scary, but
yeah,
it's not.
That's so powerful.
Yeah. So he's just revealed that a lot in my life lately. And
I
feel
that.
Like I've been able to share it with a ton of people lately,
yes.
which has been cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, okay, now that you've like really pretty much have a hold on a lot of this stuff, like how would you,
now that I'm perfect,
yeah, well, I was gonna say now that you're perfect, yeah, right.
Just kidding.
Yeah, right. Work in progress.
Yes, always.
Right, always. Like, but now that you have overcome a lot of this,
mm-hmm.
Well, one, who would you say you are now, but also, well, I guess I'll ask the second question when you're done answering.
Yeah,
that.
So who would I say I am now?
Yeah,
I would definitely say that what comes to mind is that passage in 2 Timothy that talks about how God hasn't given us a spirit of fear, but of courage
yeah.
and sound mind. And when I think about who I am now, I just feel more courageous.
Yeah.
I don't feel as petrified of being myself.
Yeah.
I'm not as afraid of what people think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not as enslaved to people's opinions.
Yeah.
That's definitely a work in progress.
Yeah.
But I would say if I've seen a path of growth, it's been in that area, especially since one of my posts went viral on social media last year and I got a lot of like random followers that didn't
okay.
know me. That has been challenged a lot in the last like 6 or 7 months, just as far as like fear of man. But
interesting.
I have even seen growth in that where I'm
yeah.
like, yeah, like that's actually not who I am. Like I don't need to be enslaved to other people.
Yeah.
My voice is my voice and I can just share it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you don't have to worry about how to share it with
yes,
other people.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which like I'm sure the fear is like there's still fear there for mm-hmm. you in all areas of life. But God has like shown you, yeah, there's going to be fear, but like you can still be courageous.
It's not paralyzed. Yeah. Yes. I'm not paralyzed by
yes.
it. I can actually
you can still
take
overcome
steps.
It.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. And then I guess, honestly, like, I think a big question would be maybe someone who is struggling specifically with, like, masturbation and
yeah,
porn.
Yeah.
What would you say to them? Maybe I'm trying to think, like, the best type of advice. But maybe it's to people who are struggling and know they struggle.
Yeah.
And also maybe people who, like, can't really see that as, like, a struggle.
As
yet.
A struggle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's such a nuanced thing.
Yeah. It's like a taboo.
I just want
topic.
To affirm to anyone listening to this that you're not crazy, especially with being a woman addicted to porn and masturbation. I felt like I was the only one
because
it was such like a man's issue.
Yeah.
That I remember in 8th grade, we were separated between the girls and the boys, and the boys talked about masturbation, girls talked about body image issues. And
interesting.
I, now that I'm older, I'm like, whoa, like all of us were dealing with all of those issues. And
yeah.
so if you're listening to this, man or woman, but specifically towards women, you're not crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You're not inherently bad. Like there's
yeah.
nothing weird about you. And this
your
is just a,
is
it's
not
a product.
Too dark.
Yeah. Your
yeah.
secret is not too dark. Practicality is something that really helped me. There is this story in the Odyssey where Odysseus was sailing across an ocean, and there were these sirens, these mermaids, that he knew that if the mermaids called out, that their music would be so alluring that he would jump into the ocean, but it would kill him. So he knew that going across the ocean. So what he did is he tied himself to the mast of his own ship, and then he went across the ocean so that way he wouldn't, you know, jump into when he heard the sirens call. So for me, I remember reading that story when I was like in the middle of being addicted to porn and masturbation. And it was just something that I did to dissociate when I was stressed. And I knew when it was coming, but I couldn't stop it because I was just so programmed.
Yeah.
So when I thought about tying myself to the mast of the ship, I was like, how do I do that? How do I set myself up for success? And so I did is I didn't sleep with my computer or my phone in my bedroom for almost 2 years.
Okay.
I took the door off of my bedroom so my roommates could see.
That's amazing.
I was like, because I just knew that anything in secret is going to keep on breeding in secret. Yeah. So I was like, I'm going to take this seriously. Remove the temptation. Yes. Yeah. And it's not going to work for everyone that way. And that doesn't take the place of healing.
Yes.
But because I was healing and I knew that that was the direction I wanted to head in, I was like, I'm just going to get rid of all the stuff that makes me go down this
Path. Oh, totally. No, I get it. Because even like with my own struggle, like basically, I catfished people. That was my whole thing. And so I, like, was really – I did it for, like, 8 years. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to keep texting these people after I was healing. Yeah. But – or, well, I was in the midst of healing, essentially. But I knew that I had to remove all of those people from my contacts because then I literally could not do it anymore.
It's because, powerful.
Yeah, it's like you have to – which it's funny because I always said, like, I was never really tempted by it again. But I think it was almost after I deleted the contacts that, like, I decided the temptation has left. Yeah. Like, I'm not allowing myself to be tempted by this anymore. So I'm just going to remove all the contacts from my phone. That way I can't do it anymore.
Yeah, you're setting yourself up. Like, they're gone from my life
at that point. Yeah, exactly. Totally.
Instead of just, like, if you're with anything, like, if you are struggling with alcoholism or whatever,
yeah,
you probably shouldn't go to a bar. Right. And there are, like, things that you need to do, even if just temporarily, to set yourself up to succeed. Because addictive behavior, it doesn't make you a dirty person.
No.
But it is harmful to you.
Yeah.
And if you want to live in, like, abundance and freedom, then ask for whatever help you need and then set yourself up in whatever ways you can.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And, like, having a support system. So
it
huge.
Means, everything.
Yeah. To hold you accountable.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think the last question is really, like, what would you say has maybe been, like, a either Bible verse or inspirational quote or a story you've heard about someone who has, like, gone through something similar and that has really, like, defined your journey?
Yeah, so there is this author. His name is Frederick Buechner. He wrote a book called Telling Secrets that I read when I was in college. It was actually the year before I ever came out with my story or had gone to therapy. And the premise of this book, it's super short. It's like 120 pages. But his dad had committed suicide when he was younger, and his mom, in order to keep up with, like, public appearance, never let anyone talk about it. So he wrote this book after his mother passed away, and it was telling secrets. It was telling all about what had happened. And in the end of this book, I believe it's the end, who knows, but he talks about this quote, and I'm going to butcher it, but if anyone wanted to look it up, they could. But it was talking about how, as humans, the thing we want the most and the thing we fear the most is to be fully known and fully loved. And so when I read that, I remember it resonating with me and thinking this story for some reason is just gripping me. And it's I couldn't tell it at the time, but it was because it was my story too. And reading through that book of him saying, like, my story is only important because it's your story too. So his whole mentality was this idea that we're all so connected to each other that when you tell your story, I actually learn a little bit more about my own. And that whole book, for some reason, just, like, flipped my world upside down before I could even put words to it.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Telling Secrets, Frederick Buechner.
All right. I'm definitely writing that one down. Yes. I have, like, such a long list of books.
Luckily, this one's short, so you can get it done in, like, 2 hours.
Oh, whoa. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'll do that then. Yeah. Well, and I think the last question would just be, like, where can people find you on social media?
Yes. So Instagram is probably your best bet. And my name is Savannah Locke.
Cool.
And my Instagram handle is Savannah_Locke. Because Savannah Locke was taken.
I hate that.
I know. It's brutal. So that's the best place to find me.
So sad. Dude, mine's the rage boss. So.
Dang. Well, at least that wasn't ever taken.
Well, literally because the story of how I got that name was, like, I, in college, we called our RA the Rage Boss because she was, like, a partier. And
yes.
She, like, RAs aren't really supposed to party. So we're like, yeah, you're the Rage Boss. Well, then I decided I'm going to take that name from her because I, like, partied sober. I always, like, I went to festivals and parties all the time, but yeah. I was the only one who, like, didn't drink. And I was the craziest one there. So I decided to start calling myself the Rage Boss.
That's so
And people
good.
Call me it, like, for fun now. And I'm like, all right. We're going
to
keep it
Yes,
up.
A good nickname is hard to find. So one that sticks, you need to keep
Especially
it
Especially when you call it yourself.
Oh, totally. 1,000%. Yes.
Yeah. Well, no, I think we're about wrapped up, but just wanted to say thank you so much for coming on. Because this has been, like, connecting with my own story. It's, like, been very inspiring. Mm-hmm. And I can't wait to, like, go home and process everything that you shared because I think that there's going to be some connection points there, too, for me.
Wow.
So,
thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you all so much for listening to the podcast today. If you want more life-giving, inspiring stories like this, you can click the big red subscribe button and go follow Savannah on her socials. And also check mine out at The Rage Boss on Instagram and on Twitter. Send me a DM. Let's chat. Hang out. Maybe not hang out, but let's chat. All right. See you next time. Bye.